Hello and welcome everyone to the Key to Licensing One Simple Idea, simplifying licensing for inventors, product developers, and idea people. If you are here looking to learn about how to get your product to market through the route of licensing, you are in the right place. Stay tuned and make sure to join the others who are on their licensing journey. And welcome everyone to another InventRight podcast. So today we are welcoming one of our coaches, also a former student of ours, Brayton Bushby. Brayton, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast, The Key to Licensing One Simple Idea.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Sylvia.
All right, Brayton, well, let's go ahead. And again, I'm not going to talk much here. I really want you to take the mic and talk about what your journey has been like, where you were when you got started with the whole licensing process or made the decision that you wanted to go into licensing your products, and how that journey has taken you to now becoming an InventRight coach. So it's all yours.
Okay, sounds good. So first of all, like many people, a lot of students and just people out there in general, I've always had ideas and always thought, you know, why doesn't someone come up with a solution for this or a solution for that? So when it came to go to school, I was deciding between either business or engineering, and I went the engineering route and ended up graduating with a degree in mechanical engineering. And then from there, I actually ended up going to Wall Street, where I was a trader on Wall Street. And after about 2.5 years, I really didn't like it. And I was just reflecting on, you know, when are the times in my life that I've been happiest, you know, and I just realized it's always when I'm being creative and coming up with solutions for things. So that's when I started going back just, you know, after work to the hobby of inventing and just thinking of new solutions for things. And at that time I was reading The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, and I saw InventRight and Stephen Key about halfway through the book, and I said, oh, that's interesting. You don't have to start your own company to get your products out there, which for me at the time was perfect because I was working 50 hours a week in New York City, and I just didn't have the time or even the knowledge to start a business. So right at the end of 2.5 years, I had a product in my hand, and I quit my job in New York City, and I called up Andrew within a couple weeks, and we had a conversation about what InventRight can do and what the system is, and that it's really about educating a system so that no matter what idea you have, you can use the InventRight 10 steps to pursue it for licensing. And not all the ideas take, unfortunately. We want every single one of our ideas to license, but they don't. Mm-hmm. But what's really important is that we're getting an education. So I said, you know what, that's perfect. That's totally worth the tuition. I have a ton of ideas. I don't know if this first one or even the second one is going to work, but eventually one is going to take. So
When you were in school for mechanical engineering, did they talk about or teach licensing?
They didn't teach licensing at all. But One thing they did teach is something called the product development process. And it's really interesting because InventRight is essentially like a mainstream or even a non-engineer's version of the product development process. So when I came to InventRight, I was like, oh, like I've learned this stuff, but this is so much more simple. And so it was really cool because I paid all this money for an engineering degree, and then InventRight, we were teaching the same thing, but much more practical.
Yes. Yeah. More real life application and a lot more simplified. So you had a product idea, you had worked on it for 2.5 years.
I hadn't worked on the idea for 2.5 years. I was working as a day trader on Wall Street for 2.5 years. And right up at the end of that, when I was getting ready to quit, I had a product in my hand. And because I had kind of, something to focus on, I was like, this is what I'm going to use to learn the InventRight system.
Okay, great. And so you jumped in and became a student in the coaching program. Is that right?
That's correct. And I joined right at the end of January 2014. And back then, the coaching program was a full year. So I did the coaching program for about 10 or 11 months. I think I kind of dropped off at the way end. But
So let's talk about your experience while you're going through the program. What was going through your mind? What were you doing? Let's go into that a little bit.
Sure. So the program was definitely a little bit different back then. I believe Andrew was my coach for the first 6 months, and then some other coaches came aboard later on. This was when Bentwright was really starting to expand. And because there was 12 months, I think I did a coaching call with Andrew like maybe every other week or once a month. It really wasn't as much of like a shotgun approach like it is now. It's much better now. There was no smart IP, so we were writing our PPAs on a Word document in a couple of hours.
Was that painful? Did you, how did you feel about that part?
I wish I could say it was painful so that other people could relate, but I've never had a problem with the PPA. Andrew was like, oh, PPA, no big deal. It shouldn't take you more than 3 or 4 hours. So it never took me more than 3 or 4 hours.
Okay. And, I hate you. I'm just kidding. No, I was a student, when I was a student, my first initial call was with Andrew, and then so I believe I started when I was in 2015 as a student. So this was still in the 12-month program, and I remember the part of writing the PPA. And again, we didn't have Smart IP at that time either, and so I just did not. That was definitely a painful process for me. I got through it. I did it done. I got it done because I wanted to plow through it. And so writing the PPA was not my favorite part. So the fact, I think it took me an entire week. And then if I put all the hours together, maybe it would have added up to 3 to 4 hours at one time. But that part I did not like the PPA aspect. So the fact that we actually have Smart IP now is great, because I really could have used it back then. But now that we have it now, it's nice to be able to use now. It makes it so much better.
Yeah. I think one of the things that helped me with the PPA, one of the reasons why I didn't mind it at the time, and I still kind of like it, is it really helps me actually think through my product. So you're thinking of all these different variations and different product. It kind of slows you down and makes you take a step back and think like, how could this product be better? So because I benefit from it, as opposed to like, it's this big chore that I have to do. I think I don't mind it.
I like the mindset where you think of it and you think of it in a different way of how can I learn from this, instead of how can I get this done as quickly as possible, or how can I plow through this to, you know, move on and get my product licensed tomorrow, right? Because realistically, it's not going to happen that way, but using it more as a tool to be able to teach you and then learn from and get really in depth with your product to see how things are written and, like you had mentioned, workarounds, et cetera. So that's really great.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up, Sylvia, because I'm a very results-oriented person. Like, if something's not getting a result, I'm like, what's the problem? Let's fix it. Yeah, that's the mechanical engineering part of me. And one thing I've learned, that the best way to get results is actually to focus on the process. And if you're focusing on learning, like, how am I getting better? How am I? The results are just going to come. So it seems kind of counterintuitive, but the best analogy I can give is, like, if you want to make a lot of money, you don't focus on money, you focus on having a really valuable business and how you can provide services to people.
Yes. Right?
So it's kind of that same thing. It's really interesting.
I like you, Brayton. I like you.
Edit that part out. Leave that part in.
I am leaving that part out, of course. I'm not editing that part out. No way. But yeah, I think that focus on the process, you read it over and over again, you hear it over and over again, and you realize that that's exactly right. It is following the process, going through the process, going through, some people call it the journey, whatever individuals want to call it. But it's not focusing on what the actual end result is, what you want that to be, but what are the steps that you need to take that turns you into the person that will make that happen.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So you're going through the program. Were you working on the same project throughout? Were you working on one idea while you're in the program?
I just, for the first 6 months, I just focused on one idea. I called between 60 and 70 potential licensees. I was dogged about this idea. I completely believed in it. And I really wanted to make sure I didn't miss a potential licensing deal. So when I put the product down, I wanted to know for sure there was no deal to be had.
Yes. And so what ended up happening? Did that product get licensed?
That product did not get licensed, but what was interesting is I started with a list of 30, like, you know, we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And it kept changing as I was getting feedback from companies. So this product, it was essentially a light that plugs into your cell phone. So you can use your cell phone as both like a base as mm-hmm. a lamp, but also like a charger. You can use the battery to power the lamp.
Oh, cool.
And so I was going after cell phone accessory companies and they weren't really having it. But they said, well, maybe you might want to try some emergency kits. You know, this might be something that's useful for like on the side of the road if you need to look at your car or something like that. So I tried that and I got a little bit better of a response. And then from there, I was also looking at camping companies because, you know, sometimes you need a light when you're camping or you're traveling. Mm-hmm. And then the last piece of advice I got was, you know, no offense, but this is kind of gimmicky. You might want to try some of the As Seen on TV people. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, okay, I haven't even thought of that. So I went to the As Seen on TV companies, and they immediately responded. They're like, we really like this. We want to test it and all this. And they got back to me a week later. They said, we tested it. Here are the results. They sent the results to me. I could see the data. And they said it just didn't perform well enough, but, you know, please send us what else you have. And I really liked, like, how professional it was. It was really quick. So I always knew that licensing was possible, even though that product didn't work.
Yeah. And so how did you feel when the product didn't work? Did you feel like super defeated, or were you like, okay, just moving on to the next idea?
I was slightly confused actually, because I kept getting this feedback that like, oh, cool idea, but not for us. So I was like, all these people like the idea, but there's no licensing agreement. I don't understand. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I really started to learn, like, you have to pay attention to people's actions, not what they say. It's really the actions that tell you what they're really thinking.
Right.
So that was really important. So that the last thing I did was, just because I couldn't get this out of my head, I started messaging people on Facebook like, hey, check out my product. Just people from high school that I wasn't really good friends with, or just people in general. And they're like, oh, really cool. And I was like, yeah, I'm having a maid. Would you want to PayPal me $10 and I'll get it? And I did this to like 30 people, and 10 of the 30 people said, yeah, sure, I'll PayPal you the $10. And not one of them did. And so that was the final nail in the coffin, where I was like, okay, people are telling me something that they don't actually believe. They're just trying to be nice. It's time to move on to another product.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Oh man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this, now that you say that, because I find this so fascinating. If they had, and it depends on each person on how they would take this. So you might be an anomaly, but I'm still going to ask you the question. Is if all 30 said, no, I don't, you know, no, like, it's interesting, but I'm not really interested in purchasing it. Like, would you have been receptive to it, or would you have reacted differently? Like, sometimes people don't want to hear the truth. Like, they don't want to hear it, or they will hear it, but they're not willing to accept it. If that makes sense.
That totally makes sense. At 25 years old at the time, there was definitely some of that going on. Just keep trucking, just plow forward. If you just push hard enough, it'll turn into a yes. And so there's definitely some of that. Now, I mean, I've done a ton of products now, and I would rather get the no's now so that I can focus my time and energy on what is going to work. But I do remember in the beginning, like, getting no was sensitive. It felt a little more personal, you know, like,
yes,
this is my product.
Yes. I think that is almost like a milestone, or a matter of timing or learning, or I don't even know what you really call it, but sometimes it's hard to hear and accept, like, the truth versus what you want to hear. And so I think that takes time and growth and experience and going through things over and over and over and over and over again, where you realize, you know, no, tell me the real truth. Give me the truth and I'm really willing to accept it versus tell me what I want to hear so that my ego or my the emotional connection that I have to, whether it's my idea or my thoughts or my beliefs or whatever it might be, is okay, makes me okay.
Yeah.
So that's so fascinating. Yep. Timing, age, experience, all of that will go into it. So
I couldn't agree with that more. And it's almost like there's like a hero's journey for licensing, where it's like in the beginning, you kind of have, you see like rainbows and this bright future.
Yeah.
And then you kind of get tired of wasting your time. So you're like, just tell me, like, is this not going to fly? It's not. Okay, good. We'll move on to another idea.
Right. Exactly.
But like, time is the only thing we have, right? You can get money back. You can, you know, reestablish relationships, but time is the one thing that you can't get back. So, you know, let's not waste it.
That's right. I agree. And I've told individuals and given them the brutal truth, you know, to have it turned around on me and almost like it be a fight, where it's like, well, I don't understand. And what do you mean? Almost trying to convince me, like, well, yes, I can license this or what. And it's hard to, you know, to hear individuals try and convince me. It's just, they're just not there yet. They're not willing to accept or listen, or they're just not at that point and are able to move on. So, all right. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say one more thing. I think, you know, going back to what we were saying before, is having a learning mindset or a growth mindset, where you're thinking like, okay, I'm learning this process. This is my first time in Eventbrite, and really this is probably one of my first times inventing a product. I maybe have a bunch, but I've never done this before. So let me not have such solid and rigid expectations and be open to learning.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's just so beautiful.
It makes a life a lot easier.
Yes, exactly. Be able to be flexible and have realistic expectations. I think sometimes individuals will come in with not having that. And like you had mentioned, it being all rainbows. And I know that there's always excitement, especially when you're working on your product and it's your idea and you've invested especially a lot of individuals will come in having invested a lot of time and money and may have been doing things not the right way or not the Eventbrite way. And that's okay. But hopefully willing to, like you had mentioned, learn and grow from and continuing to learn and grow from how to move forward from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then how did you transition to becoming an Eventbrite coach?
So after that year, I actually, I was living in New York City, and towards the end of that year, I had worked on a second product. So I actually did two products during that first year boot camp. And this second product, you know, now that I had a little bit of a taste of the As Seen on TV and what you know, how quickly they work, I came up with a product just for As Seen on TV. And that product, we ended up signing a term sheet with royalty rates and all the stuff. And they were manufacturing it or supposedly manufacturing it in China. And so I just saw dollar signs in my eyes. I thought, this is great. I'm going to be rich. Like, this is it. And so I ended up driving across, moving from New York City to California, San Diego. And the deal just kind of fell apart. They, as a lot of deals do, if you don't stay on top of them, if you're not always there to help the licensee figure out, you know, the problems that inevitably arise, particularly with manufacturing, these things can fall apart. And so the deal fell apart after my first year boot camp. I had no license agreement, but I always had that idea in my head that licensing was possible. And anytime I have an idea for a product, that this was the method that I could use to see if it had legs. So fast forward, I ended up taking 2 years off of licensing. I was doing other stuff. I got some sales jobs, and then in 2017, I had a bunch more ideas. Like, you know, I really need to give Eventbrite another crack. It's just a numbers game. Like, I need to keep pushing these ideas. One of them's going to take, and then another one, but it's not going to happen unless I just keep putting ideas out there with the Eventbrite process.
That's right.
So that's when I started doing my own sell sheets, right? So that first year taught me enough to get in trouble. I knew how to research products. I knew how to do some type of prototype. I knew how to put on a sell sheet. I knew how to call companies. I did not know how to negotiate or what a good contract was or any of that. So what I did is I pursued my ideas with sell sheets, and then surely enough, one of them came back and said, hey, let's do a deal. And I was like, oh crap, now what? So that's when I signed up for my second boot camp. At this time, this is kind of spring 2017, and the boot camp 6 months. Mm-hmm. And my coach
is- What's going on here? 6 months? Eddie, were you in shock?
No, I liked it. I said this is gonna push me to work a lot faster. And it did. So during that time, I ended up signing two licensing agreements, two different products. And then I had a third one on the table. And so I think that kind of caught Steven and Andrew and some of the other coaches' eyes that I had done almost three products in the 6 month boot camp, three license agreements. And so when my boot camp ended, Paul Sorensen stayed in touch with me, just, hey, I know you do a lot of products. How's everything going? And I was like, it's great, just working. He's like, and he kind of planted the seed in my head. He's like, you know, what do you think about coaching at InventRight? I said, oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that before. I was just saying that to him. I had thought about it before. I thought coaching at InventRight would be awesome. And then we kept talking for another few months. And then finally, I guess Andrew and Steven were ready to bring on another coach and Terry. So I started interviewing. And this was a year ago as of last September.
And then you became an InventRight coach.
And then I became an InventRight coach, yeah.
So how is that experience from being coached to being the coach?
It's so interesting because I think as a coach, I learn more than I ever did as a student because I'm seeing all these different situations and it's not that I don't know how to handle the situation, but they're each a little bit unique.
Yeah.
So it stretches you in different ways. You know, it's still sell sheets, it's still benefit statements, it's still PPAs, mm-hmm. but the product's always new.
Yeah.
It's still initial interest calls, but the licensee has a particular interest that they want to factor in. It's like, oh, that's interesting. I never heard of that. So you still get the deals done and you help students, but it's always slightly different. So I'm learning a ton now. It's fantastic.
Yeah, you learn a lot of the gray areas. Everything mm-hmm. is a lot of people, you know, are understand or may have heard about the process and the 10 steps, but then it's almost like there's the in between the 10 steps or the sub steps of the 10 steps or all the nuances or all the gray areas, the twists and the turns, as we mentioned, because every person's situation is unique. Each product is different. The company that might be interested is different, and people that they're speaking with. I mean, there's so much that's still going on. And so it's different with every student that you're working with, and you get to continue to learn. So yeah, I agree. I think when you're teaching, you're also just learning so much more as you're teaching it yourself. It's mm-hmm. that's amazing.
Yeah.
So what would you say, like, what do you see that a lot of individuals have the hardest time with?
I think the biggest thing and one thing that really changed for me during those 2 years that I took off from 2014 bootcamp to 2017 is really accountability and having your word mean everything. So if you say, okay, I'm going to do this sell sheet by Sunday, it's done. You're going to do it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. There's no, oh, I didn't get to it. I think that's the biggest thing if you want to, particularly in licensing, but just in anything, if you want to see results, your word has to mean exactly what you say it does.
Yes, I agree 100%. I feel the same way. You have to take a very, that approach of I'm going to do what I say, I'm going to say what I do, I'm going to do what I say. Like, you have to do it. And when you don't do it, figure out the excuse that you made not to do it, because it's not a real reason. It's really just more of an excuse. So,
yeah.
And getting it done. no matter what, like no matter what, this is what I'm planning to do. There is no other option. And so having that accountability is so important. And you hear and you read, and I mean, there's studies that even show, I believe, up to 90%, but I would imagine the number is probably higher than that, of individuals who are truly, you know, show success and end up being successful, always have a mentor. They always have accountability. There's always somebody that is checking in with them. Because if you, even if you read and learn about the primitive brain and how our brains are really meant to be lazy, like not want to do stuff, not want to push ourselves, not want to, you know, be challenged. And so when those challenges arise, it's easy to make excuses and not to do it. And so by somebody actually keeping you accountable to it and making sure that it gets done, you're more likely to get it done, if that makes sense.
I completely agree with all of that. I definitely didn't invent accountability for myself. In fact, I probably didn't want it, but I wanted the result more than I wanted to feel comfortable. So I got a bunch of coaching that held me accountable, and it becomes a habit. And then not only that, you really start to build confidence in yourself. When you see that, you know, you can trust yourself, when you say something and then it happens, it your self-esteem and confidence goes through the roof. And then you also start getting results, and it's just this upward spiral where you keep going.
Absolutely. I agree. Any final words, Brayton? Any recommendations, suggestions, and or keys to licensing that you would say to somebody who's looking to take this journey?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think what we just hit on, accountability is huge. If you say you're going to do something, you have to do it. That's just the bottom line. You either have results or you have excuses. You have a goal and you either accomplish it or you have excuses for why you didn't. So it's really important to be dogmatic with accountability. And then the other thing is, you know, licensing is not a one shot, one kill. You got to try a lot of ideas. You got to call a lot of companies, and there's a lot of no's, but it's all worth it. You got to just keep pushing. Don't get so set on one particular product, you know, making the bank for you. Just try a lot of ideas. And you see that with Steven's stories. He's done a lot of products. The InventRight coaches, we've all done a ton of products.
Yeah.
It's a numbers game.
Yeah.
And, just keep a learning mindset. You know, you're here to learn. Of course, you want the result, but the way to get the result is just to keep learning.
And with that, we will end on that note. So thank you so much, Brayton, for your journey coming on this show with us. For those of you who would like more information about InventRight, the InventRight 10-step process, our coaches, and just licensing in general, you can go to InventRight TV, our YouTube channel, also our website, InventRight.com. If you haven't done so already, pick up the book, One Simple Idea, and read it. Get educated and learn. And we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Key to Licensing, One Simple Idea, the podcast. If you haven't already, please go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. You can also check out our YouTube shows, InventRight TV, with Stephen Key and Andrew Krause. Join me next week for another interview. Thank you for listening, and keep inventing.